I'm Bill Castle, and this is Free Expression. This program is all about conveying the Christian message from a Catholic point of view and defending the liberty which makes it possible to do that. In this special edition, we discuss an important new book that examines the malign origins of Chinese communism and the challenge it presents to religious faith and individual freedom. Join us, sit back, and enjoy some free expression. It's a given that political systems can become oppressive. Those of us of the Cold War generation who grew up with the split between the free world and the Iron Curtain certainly know that. But if you ask why certain nations go down the totalitarian road, most folks can't point to reasons beyond the general, say a craving for power or the lack of democratic institutions or the dream of dominating the world. Oppression can be so severe, however, and totalitarian methods can be so extreme and encompassing that mere politics doesn't seem adequate to explain it all. Stephen Mosier has looked deeply into Chinese totalitarianism. In his new book, The Devil and Communist China, he charts traditions and modes of thought that have persisted from the very beginnings of Chinese civilization and which can truly be described as diabolical. Stephen, thanks very much for taking time to tell us about this work.
Well, it's good to be with you today.
I suppose that Hitler is the cliché of the evil dictator, but for all their inhuman acts, it doesn't seem like the Nazis ever succeeded in building a system that dominated German society as thoroughly as what we're seeing today in China. How has all of this happened?
Well, multiple causes. I mean, the original cause was the decision of a young, brilliant Chinese man by the name of Mao Zedong to adopt communism as the governing ideology of his life and of the party that he helped to found. And it turns out that Mao was a uniquely evil individual. You know, I've written about Chinese history before. I've written about the ideology of Chinese communism, about the history of Chinese communism. By the way, the Chinese Communist Party says that if you speak honestly and accurately about our history or about our ideology, you're going to imperil our continued rule. Why? Well, because the history is a fabrication. They cover up all their crimes. So The Devil in Communist China is a look at the spiritual aspects of Communist Chinese rule led by one of the most evil characters, I think, in all of human history. And I say that having spent the last four decades of my life studying Mao Zedong and the Chinese Communist Party and the tragedy that it has visited upon the Chinese people. It turns out that when Mao was a young boy, about 3 years old, his mother took him outside the village to a local stone monolith, a local stone god, as it were. It was a monolith with a pool at the foot of it that was thought to be inhabited by a powerful spirit. And she consecrated him to this monolith, this spirit, and rechristened him, gave him a new name. His given name, of course, was Mao Zedong. But his new name was the third son of the monolith, or the third son of stone. So she basically asked the spirit of the stone to adopt him. Now, as a Christian, that disturbs me because one never knows what demonic spirits lurk about in the world. But regardless of what the effect had on Mao at the time, he turns out to be a man with a heart of stone, literally never cared for anyone, rejected God as a young man, rejected all aspects of the natural law that I think is written in every human heart, rejected the precepts of Buddhism, of respect for life, of the rejection of lust and the rejection of material things, rejected the precepts of Confucianism, which call for respect, honoring one's parents, one's father particularly. He once said his father should be struggled and killed because he was a rich peasant.
This is really a religious issue right from the very beginning.
Well, I think so. You know, I'm not saying that Mao Zedong made a pact with the devil or was possessed by the devil. It does seem that Karl Marx, in some of his poems, speaks very, very intimately of having a relationship with the evil one. Mao never writes in that fashion, in that vein. In fact, he declares himself to be godless and lawless quite proudly as a young man. He rejects God and he rejects the law. The two sort of go together, of course. But it's clear from his actions, if you look at his long life, through the lens of the natural law, through the lens of the Ten Commandments, the basic expression, I think, of the natural law, you'll see someone who always rejects the good and always embraced evil. Faced with a choice of achieving a goal by telling the truth, for example, or by telling a lie and deceiving someone, he would tell the lie because he could then deceive someone and count himself clever in so doing. So if he hadn't made a pact with the devil, he might as well have, because at every turn he seems to take the course that leads him not towards good, but towards evil.
We're talking, of course, about one of the most ancient civilizations, a civilization that achieved great heights of artistic accomplishment, scientific accomplishment, in its way, very sophisticated, although it certainly had widespread poverty and illiteracy and all of that. How is it that China would have embraced a figure like this?
There are many aspects of Chinese culture that are admirable, the painting, the poetry.
Sure.
I've lived in China. I've lived in Asia, China-speaking areas for 10 years. I read and speak Chinese. I speak Mandarin, Cantonese, and some Taiwanese. I have many friends in China. But the political culture went in a fundamentally different way than it did in the West. And the difference, I think, is accounted for largely by Christianity in the West, because in the East, without the influence of Christianity, which tells us to love God and to love our neighbors as ourselves, the rulers went in the opposite direction. They developed an early form of totalitarianism during the Warring States period, which ran for several hundred years, where all of North China was in a constant state of warfare. Little kingdoms here, there, and everywhere were being attacked and absorbed by larger kingdoms. And the end result of that process, that war of all against all, was the coalescing of China into a single country in 221 BC, you know, over 2,000 years ago. But how that happened, the ruler who won that contest was the ruler who adopted a totalitarian philosophy. It was called legalism. And what legalism said was the ruler has to stamp out all competing ideologies, to burn the books of Confucius and Mencius and all the other philosophers and only follow legalism. They have to have a standing army. They have to control the economy, especially the production of salt and iron, iron necessary for weapons, salt necessary for the diet. They have to have political commissars in the army to watch over the generals. They have to have song and dance troops to sing the propaganda praises of the ruler around the countries. They have to have concentration camps where people who violate the rules are sent to build, the Great Wall and the Great Canals of China. All the things we associate with modern Marxist-Leninism were actually invented in China 2,500 years ago. So for Mao, as a young man in 1921, communism was a natural fit for him because it comported so well with the traditional political culture of China. And people say, well, wait a minute, well, I haven't heard about legalism. I've heard about Confucianism. But where's legalism come from? Well, Confucianism was the silken costume that was adopted by the emperors. You must obey me, they said, because I'm the father figure, you're my children. But underneath that silken costume of Confucianism lurked the iron scaffolding of legalism, which was this totalitarian form of rule. And boy, if you didn't kowtow voluntarily, or if you rebelled against the emperor, he would annihilate you and your whole clan out to five generations. The punishments of the emperors that they imposed on the people for rebelling or speaking out against the emperor were horrific. The legalist philosophy was to impose 10 punishments for one reward. You don't get people to do what you want them to do by offering them carrots. You beat them with sticks until they comply. So that was the governing principle of China for 2,000 years. And, of course, it's reached its best expression one might say, its cruelest expression, its most brutal expression in Chinese Communist Party structure of government today.
I certainly remember the Cultural Revolution and Mao's Little Red Book and the Red Guards and all of that. But it did look for a time, at least to those of us who, I guess, were a little naive, that China was emerging from all of that. It opened itself to the West. It was very eager to be welcomed into the international business community. And then suddenly it seems to have taken a turn backward.
Here's what happened. You have a committed communist, Mao Zedong, take power in 1949 after a vicious decades-long civil war in which, 30 million Chinese were killed. And then he launches upon a drive towards full-blown communism. The capitalist is killed. Anyone associated with a nationalist regime is executed. Large landowners are tortured and killed in the land reform. And then they move towards the communes in the late 1950s. Anyone with an higher education was automatically suspect in the anti-rightist campaign of 57-58. People are forced into the communes. Those farmers, those villagers who don't want to go in the communes, are tortured and killed. People miss that part of the land reform. And then the commune system fails. Why? Because you put 50,000 people in a commune and told them to farm the land together under the supervision of political cadres who know nothing about agriculture. Naturally, crops were not planted at the right time. They were left to rot in the fields as political campaigns took over the entire country. The result in 1960 to 1962 was a famine in which 45 million people died. 45 million people died in the worst famine in human history. It was a man-made famine, or rather a Mao-made famine, because Mao Zedong is directly responsible not only for forcing people into the communes, but for refusing food aid that was offered by the United States and Canada and Australia when news of the famine leaked out. He denied there was a famine. He said, people have plenty to eat. He would rather let people starve by the tens of millions, rather than accept aid from the West, which would mean acknowledging his failure. At one point, he said, what does it really matter if a third of the population dies? Their bodies will fertilize the soil. He viewed his fellow Chinese as nothing more, really, than human compost. Oh. They fertilize the soil, he said. Totally inhuman. Heart of stone.
Where are we now? There are so many conflicting reports. China is on the march. It's building up its military. It's threatening Taiwan and the Philippines and the South China Sea. At the same time, there are stories emerging that it's teetering on the brink of economic collapse, that it's had large-scale failures. It's a very mixed picture, and people don't know what to make of it.
It is, and all of those things are happening in real time. To go back and answer your original question, though, what happened? We thought China, just thought China was going our way. It was modernizing. It was industrializing. It seemed to be becoming a more open society in the 80s and 90s. What's happened since? Well, what happened since was we have now Xi Jinping in charge, and Xi Jinping is modeling himself on all things on Chairman Mao, on Mao Zedong, who was a committed communist. So is Xi Jinping. He gave secret speeches upon taking power in late 2012, early 2013, talking about the need to go down the socialist road. So once again, China is going down the socialist road to ruin. Mao led China down the socialist road to ruin. It ended with the Cultural Revolution, with the economy in collapse, with people starving, with political chaos at his death in 1976. That's why Deng Xiaoping, who was, make no mistake, a committed communist, reached out to the West, reached out to the United States and said, please help us, in effect. And we did. We opened our markets to cheap Chinese-made goods. We poured, hundreds of billions of dollars of investment into China. We transferred cutting-edge technology to China. We helped them develop a very powerful and successful export sector. We enabled the rise of the new China that wants to replace us as the dominant power in the world. Probably the biggest strategic blunder in human history. We enabled the rise of the country that wants to destroy us. But that went on for 20 years. There was not fundamental reform on the part of the Chinese Communist Party, which maintained tight political control. The reforms were only in the economic sphere, and they were only undertaken to stave off disaster. Economic reform did not mean that political reform was going to happen, and it didn't happen. And so now we see Xi Jinping repeating Mao Zedong's errors and taking China once more down the socialist road to ruin. In a sense, he can't help himself because he's older, he's a megalomaniac, he's becoming paranoid, as Mao did in his later years. He wants total control. And if you really want total control, you have to control not only where people go, what they buy, where they work, and where they're allowed to travel. You have to try to control their very thoughts. And that's what he's about in China today. China is the world's first high-tech digital dictatorship, where the state is watching everybody in real time, all the time, using surveillance cameras, using artificial intelligence, using hundreds of thousands of police, security forces. China actually spends a lot of money on external defense, but it spends more money on internal security than it does on its military, because they're more afraid of their own people, 1.4 billion Chinese, than they are of foreign powers like the United States.
That raises an interesting question. Where do the Chinese people themselves stand on all this? Is there widespread enthusiasm for this socialist vision, or do they wish to be more liberated? What are the feelings?
Well, a lot of them wish to be elsewhere. I mean, that's why there are tens of thousands of Chinese pouring across our southern border right now. There's a huge pool of money and people who are desperate to get out of China because they see the walls closing in once again. They lived, at least the older Chinese, lived through the Cultural Revolution, the Great Leap Forward, the Great Famine. They know that China is going down the same socialist road to ruin once again. They don't want any part of it, so they'd like to get out of China. The young people especially, the youth unemployment rate is officially 16%. It was a few months ago 21%, but the government has now changed the definition, so it came down 5%. There's a lot of cooking the books in China. The real unemployment rate for young people in China is probably about 40%.
Wow.
There's a sense of hopelessness in China. They've tremendously overbuilt in the cities. There are 65 million homes, apartments that are now empty. And where are the people who are going to occupy those apartments? They don't exist. They were killed during the one-child policy, which ran from 1980 to 2016. Now, I was in China in 1980, in 1979. I was the first American social scientist allowed into China. And I was in the operating group in 1980 when the one-child policy began, and young women who were pregnant with their second or third or fourth child were brought in at 7, 8, 9 months of pregnancy for forced abortions. That policy, that horrific policy, that barbaric policy continued for 36 years, and the Chinese Communist Party brags that they eliminated 400 million people from their population. Well, those are the young people who would have married and had children and occupied those 65 million empty apartments. Those are the young people who would be buying cars and starting businesses and making investments and driving the Chinese economy forward. They're gone, along with the children and grandchildren they would have had. So China is in demographic decline. They're filling more coffins and cradles each year. That's a big economic headwind right there. When your population is aging and dying, it's hard to make economic progress. And the other thing is, Xi Jinping is putting a target on wealth creators in China. The most dangerous place to be a billionaire in the world today is China. If you're a billionaire or a CEO, you can be arrested, tortured, executed. Some of them are being suicided off the balcony of a high-rise apartment building. Why? Because Xi Jinping has said he doesn't mind people getting wealthy as long as they serve the party. And to make sure they serve the party, what has he done? He's put political commissars on the boards of almost every private company in the country. Now, if I'm the owner of the company or the CEO, And all of a sudden, sitting across from me at a board meeting as a representative of the Chinese Communist Party, that company is no longer mine. I'm no longer in charge. The representative of the party dictates what we do, what we sell, our policies. And some of these political cars have decided that the best way to ensure that the wealthy use their wealth to serve the party is by stealing it from them. And so what they do is they accuse the CEO or the billionaire of corruption, easy to do in China because there's corruption everywhere. And then the state expropriates his wealth, and the Communist Party political commissar benefits mightily from that process. It's a system now that is once again destroying its wealth creators, as Chairman Mao did in the 50s with disastrous results. Xi Jinping is now doing in the 2020s, repeating the same mistake.
Looking at this from the point of view of religion, China has been the focus of missionary activity among Christian groups for a couple of centuries now. Has any of this taken hold? We now see the Communist Party clamping down on the Catholic Church in particular, and I imagine on other religious groups. What's the spiritual reality on the ground?
Christian missionaries have been in China for centuries.
Yeah.
In fact, the first Christian martyr that we know of was killed in 1644. He was a Catholic missionary. And there have been many martyrs in China since, during the Boxer Rebellion and in 1898. The communists, as soon as they launched their revolution in the 1920s, began killing missionaries from time to time when they found them. Mao Zedong declared that Christian missionaries were actually terrorists. They were no better than Nazis, he said, and they deserved to be eliminated. And yet, there are in China today entire villages that are Christian and that have managed to hold out against the past 75 years of vicious communist persecution. I visited some of those villages. And, you know, in unity, they're a strength, not diversity. In unity, they're a strength. And if all the village is Catholic or Protestant and they all stand together, they've been able to withstand some of the problems that have been visited upon their brothers and sisters in the cities and other places in China. But the persecution has been intense. It was intense in the 1950s when Mao Zedong wanted to destroy Christianity in China altogether, seeing it as a quote-unquote foreign religion. It is intensifying right now when Xi Jinping wants to kind of set up his own church. You know, he's the head of his own church, right? He's the semi-deity, the head of the Chinese Communist Party, and he wants people to kneel at his altar. So he's busy stamping out Tibetan Buddhism and Taoist practices and all of the other religions in China. But he has a special animosity towards Christianity because it's viewed in China, even though it's been there for centuries, it's viewed by the Communist Party as a Western import. So people are being arrested for practicing their faith. At the same time, the Chinese Communist Party is continuing its effort to infiltrate and co-opt and control Christian and Catholic churches in China. And the way they do that is by making Christians of all denominations join the Patriotic Church, which is run by the Chinese Communist Party. And they do it in other ways as well. They do it by rewriting the Bible. You see, the Communist Party has produced its own version of the Bible, which is not the one that you and I may have. It's fundamentally different. The book of Revelation is gone forever because the party wants people to focus on the here and now and on social issues rather than on the hereafter. And some of the stories have been changed. For example, in the story about the woman caught in adultery, where Jesus says, "Go and sin no more," after preventing her from being stoned. In the communist version of that story, Jesus stones her to death himself, which is a complete, you know, blasphemous reading of the history, distortion of the history. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to destroy Christianity from the inside. It won't work. It's never worked. Christianity survived in the catacombs of ancient Rome, and it is surviving in the catacombs of China today. But the persecution, make no mistake, is intensifying.
The book is The Devil and Communist China, From Mao Down to Xi. It's from Tan Books. Where can people find more information about it?
Yeah, you can get it at tanbooks.com. That's TAN Books, one word, .com. You can get it from us at My Institute, Population Research Institute. The website is easy. It's pop.org, P-O-P, .org. And if you get it from us, I'll have a chance to sign it before it's sent out. And it's in bookstores everywhere. It's a reflection not just on the evil of Mao Zedong and the system he created. It's also a reflection on the good and the true and the beautiful, because you cannot contemplate evil without turning to the good, which I do in the book.
Stephen Mosher, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate you taking time to talk about this and to introduce us to this work.
Thank you.
March of the Volunteers, the national anthem of the People's Republic of China. If you've been listening to these shows online but would like to hear them on the radio, tell your local Catholic station. Free Expression with Bill Castle is available for broadcast free of charge. Ask your Catholic station to contact us by email, billcastle@sbcglobal.net. That's BILLKASSEL, all one word, billcastle@sbcglobal.net. And don't forget to support your local station. In this time of censorship and so-called cancel culture, Catholic radio is becoming increasingly important as an alternative media source. Our programming is based on the Word of God and the teaching of His Church, and we bring you the factual, truthful information you aren't getting from the mainstream media. Support Catholic Radio. Your generosity keeps Catholic outlets on the air, and donations to broadcast ministries can be tax-deductible. Let me know what you think about these shows. I'd love your suggestions on topics we might explore that touch the lives of Catholics today. Email billcastle@sbcglobal.net. Be with us next time when we explore other aspects of religious communication and look deeper into the great Christian heritage of free expression. Free Expression with Bill Castle is a production of Good Shepherd Catholic Radio and Company Publications, where good books, good music, and good radio are always good company. Dan Kuras provided technical assistance. Theme and incidental music are by Dan Adam. The program was produced and directed by Bill Castle. This is Good Shepherd Catholic Radio.